And a very happy President's Day to one and all. Again, we do repeat this show because it's so good. But the original broadcast is on President's Day, February 17th, 2020. You are listening to a fine-er mid-morning coffee break with Adam, which is I, and the professor, Dr. Ronald L. Fine Person, or Fineman, from Florida, where it's always warm. Had some snow last week, well-deserved. It's been kind of a snow-free winter, but the plows were out, and don't mind a little change in seasons and variety. You know, Buckeye Chuck and Punxsutawney Phil, they predicted an early spring, and, you know, so far, it's warming up a little bit, and maybe they will be correct. But let's take a little trip south and visit with Dr. Ron Fineman on this President's Day 2020, as we now can count the New Hampshire and Iowa, primary races in the books. Ron, first, how are you today on this fine Monday morning President's Day?
Yeah, good morning. I'm very happy to be here with you again. And this is my favorite day because, don't forget, as you call me, I'm a presidentologist, and this is President's Day.
Yes, Ron is a presidentologist, a scholar in presidentialism or presidentology, a word we've submitted to the dictionary. Maybe will be recognized, just like selfie and a few other words that are new and exciting. Now, we did have the Iowa caucuses to begin the 2020 election season. We talked about those in depth last show. We've now had the New Hampshire primaries, and it's more of a real race rather than those dumb caucuses, which really make no sense. I still don't understand what a caucus is, and we both agree it's a stupid idea. It should go the way of the hula hoop, but so far, we still have these.
Yeah, only Nevada coming up next and Wyoming, which is the smallest state, have caucuses, along with, I think, Puerto Rico. So I think they should wipe them out. They should all be primaries in the future, and probably regional primaries or one all-day primary, you know, for the whole country, one or the other, because I just think caucuses are crazy.
I heard a rumor, Ron, that in Puerto Rico, the Democratic contenders, or the Republican contenders, are, of course, Donald J. Trump and Bounty Paper Towels, because Donald J. Trump is such a fan of paper towels in the fine place called Puerto Rico. I don't think Donald realizes it's part of the United States, but it is. It's not a state. It's kind of like
treats them as if they're not. He doesn't want to give them adequate aid. He claims he's given more than he's given for recovery.
It's a territory. It is a territory, right? Not a possession. Territory would be the correct
commonwealth. It's called a commonwealth. Yeah,
but Pennsylvania and Virginia call themselves commonwealths, as does Kentucky.
That's true, and so is Massachusetts, I think, and also Kentucky, I think it is. Yeah.
But it's kind of like D.C. It's the state that isn't. Kind of hard to explain, but it is part of the United States, no matter how you slice it. And
yeah, there was a D.C. amendment that passed Congress in the 70s, but it didn't get enough states to ratify it, so D.C. is not a state.
But in time, Puerto Rico might become the 51st state. That's certainly been rumored, and I think it should be. To me, Puerto Rico really seems more like a state than Hawaii. I mean, Alaska, I would say, does. But Hawaii is kind of in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the ocean. And Puerto Rico, also an island, but a little closer, and you know, not really far from you there in Florida. It seems like the culture of Puerto Rico has become so important in the United States.
I tell you, when I was growing up, Puerto Ricans were the major Hispanic group outside maybe the West Coast, you know, but, you know, because I didn't live in California. But now, of course, Mexican Americans are 2/3 of all Hispanics. But Puerto Ricans are still important in New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and Florida.
Yeah, so, you know, 50 is such a nice round number for number of states. 51 is kind of an odd number, but we shall see. Maybe we can pick
a new flag, which might be problematical.
Maybe we can pick another place and have 52 states, just like 52 weeks in a year. Well, 52 weeks in one day, 2 days during a leap year.
Maybe D.C. could finally become a state. The state of Columbia, it would be called.
Yeah, I mean, D.C. has those license plates that say taxation without representation. That's just so facetious. I just love those license plate slogans.
And they have more people than Wyoming, Alaska, and I think North and South Dakota, any one of those. So they really should be a state, but it failed the one time they tried an amendment.
We've also had rumors that Texas or California could become a separate country, Texit or Calexit. In my opinion, California is like a separate country anyway. Then you have these people at the called the Republic of Texas that actually think Texas is a separate country, and they consider it to be that way.
Well, California is, I think, the sixth largest economy in the world, something like that, or seventh. I think it's sixth, so it could be its own nation. It's true.
I mean, New York City, I mean, that could be a separate state. I mean, many rumors, but for now, Puerto Rico is kind of like the state that isn't, just like D.C. It's essentially an independent city, and we have a nice, even number of states.
I saw an article in the New York Times about California, how a lot of people, because of cost of living and other issues, have left California to go to other states. But as they move, well, California loses those people, and they only slightly gaining population, will probably lose a congressional seat because of that. The fact is that California is moving elsewhere, bring their liberal democratic ideas with them, and it's starting to affect other states like Nevada, Arizona, and Texas. Is this what this article said, so that it could make really those states much more like California as far as liberal democratic viewpoint, not conservative Republican, which is a fascinating thought.
Yet the field of politics, political science, government, and of course presidentology never run out of interesting tidbits to ponder. Now, Ron is the author of the blog, which he's been doing for 11-plus years. It's called theprogressiveprofessor.com. It's subtitled An Educated View from the Left, and Ron is a moderate left person, and not a radical left like, of course, Bernard Sanders or Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren. Or
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
AOC, or the person who recently, thank goodness, dropped out of the presidential race. That, of course, would be Mr. Andrew Yang, who really wasn't very impressive anyway, as Ron and I have previously pondered. And many of his articles...
Now, I wanted to mention that Mayor de Blasio of New York, who was briefly a candidate, endorsed Bernie Sanders on Friday. And so I wrote, good luck, but it's... I don't think it's going to lead to... I don't think it's a plus, and I don't think de Blasio is taken seriously by anybody anyway.
So de Blasio did not endorse the previous person who held his job, which, of course, is Mr. Bloomberg. He endorsed Mr. Sanders. Now,
but interestingly, de Blasio did back Hillary Clinton over Bernie in 16. Now he's back in, of course, she's not running. Now he's back in Bernie and saying he thinks Bernie would have won in 2016 if he had been the candidate instead of Hillary, which I don't agree, but some people, you could always say maybe. Same with Joe Biden. How do you know what didn't happen?
He certainly has gone further to the left, hasn't he? Now, in New Hampshire...
Well, he's on the left anyway, but I'm not overly impressed with de Blasio. I wasn't impressed with him from the beginning. But I wasn't impressed with Ed Koch or Giuliani either. So, I mean, mayors of New York are loudmouths, mostly.
Yeah, I like Giuliani. Now, granted, since his mayoral days, he's gotten a little crazy. He was...
I think he's certifiable now.
Yeah, I mean, he was, in his day, he was a moderate to liberal Republican. Crime went down. He was wonderful after the 9/11 tragedy. But he's kind of taken a turn and become a bit of a different man than he was 20 years ago. But
I wanted to mention that in 08, when he was in the front runner early in the primary, before the primaries in the polls, Giuliani was thought to be the favorite in 07, 08 for the Republican nomination. Joe Biden at the time said, when you think about Giuliani, what is he? 9/11 and what else? And he made fun of him. And I think that's one of the reasons Giuliani wanted to go after Joe Biden, because he resented that he made fun of him.
Well, crime went down quite a bit in New York City when he was mayor, and I've been reading that crime is going back up, and kind of a shame with New York, unofficially is the capital of the world. There is no world capital, but if there were one, it probably would be New York City. And New York seems to have reversed some of the progress that it made under the Giuliani administration. And that certainly may be a topic of controversy, something we can kind of do pros and cons on, but... As I see it, Giuliani was a great mayor, but he's kind of taken a turn in the other direction since those days. Kind of can say the same thing about Ben Carson. He was a great doctor.
Carson's totally off the wall. He's nuts.
He's become a bit of a character, to put it mildly, but that's all part of the fun of politics. The personalities behind the people.
You know what it is? Anybody who connects themselves to Trump seems to go a little bit berserk. You notice that? These people have a reputation.
Yeah, I think
they get involved with Trump.
Donald is a bit of a character, to put it mildly, and I think he breathes on these people and becomes they become characters also. Now, in New Hampshire, Ron, not surprisingly, Bernie won, but not by much. I mean, by like five or six votes over presidential possibility Pete, formerly known as Mayor Pete. And New Hampshire, for those of you who have the geographical skills of Donald Trump, of course, he's not very good at geography. New Hampshire borders Vermont, which is where Bernie Sanders is from. And New Hampshire and Vermont, just like most of New England, are quite liberal. So it wasn't really surprising that Bernie Sanders won, but didn't win by very much. And Pete won in
Iowa.
New
Hampshire is the least liberal of the six New England states. It is more a state that sometimes votes Republican and is a borderline case for the Democrats. The other five New England states are definitely blue. But what's interesting is Warren did so poorly is because she's also a neighbor of Vermont.
Southeastern New Hampshire is essentially a suburb of Massachusetts.
So in a way, that she, I understand they're both from New England, but in a way, I thought Warren might win it, but she really did very poorly, as did Joe Biden.
I see Pete really as the winner because he's an outsider, and it is a relatively conservative part of New England, and it was almost a dead heat between Mr. Buttigieg and Mr. Sanders. And Pete's becoming the surprise possible front runner, and that will certainly be interesting when we have Super Tuesday. We have primaries in major states like Florida, because Ron's already indicated he's voting for Pete. Of course, Ohio and
so that's not March 3rd. That's the 17th in Florida. But California, Texas, Minnesota, Colorado, Virginia, and other states are voting on March 3rd. And Amy's also moving up. I'm very impressed. The two Midwesterners, the area Hillary could not win, are the ones that look the best now, Amy and Pete, one way or the other. They might be a good combination.
Yeah, when these big states have their primaries, we'll find out if Pete is for real. And will Amy do well in the Midwest, in her home turf, in Minnesota? I've decided I am more than likely voting for Amy. I really like Tom Steyer, but he doesn't have a chance. Amy, I don't know if she has a chance, but if she doesn't win, at least she can't blame me. And would you agree, Ron? She is like Hillary Clinton, maybe even a little bit to the right of Hillary, economic, moderate, if not conservative, you know, good on people issues, good on women's rights and minority rights, smart, well-spoken, says it like it is. But I think she's more of a likable person, probably because she's not as well-known as Hillary.
She's not nice to her staff, we've learned. But again, I point out, many presidents have not been good to their staffs. Trump, Bill Clinton, and LBJ and Nixon. And you know, we don't have people making a bigger deal about it because they're men. So I don't know if it's really fair to make a big issue of how she treats her staff. That's her private business. I don't know if that's really much to judge her on.
And good age. She's around 60. Hillary was a little older when she had run. So, you know, Amy, I'd like to see if she can go all the way. You never know. Sometimes these people come from behind and end up the nominee. Of course, the person that we have been thinking was the front runner for the last several months, Mr. Joe Biden, also known as Sniffy. Of course, I have nicknames for all these people.
Touchy-feely.
Many people feel that he should be put out to pasture, that he is not the front runner. He's nothing more than an also-ran. You write in your blog, the progressive professor, Ron, last Thursday, is Joe Biden done? Not so quickly, one might say. Former Vice President Joe Biden has done poorly in the Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary, being fourth and fifth respectively. Many observers are thinking that he is done. But he's favored to win in South Carolina and, in theory, is the only Democrat to have widespread African-American support. Now, we've talked about this, Ron. For 8 years, Biden's boss was a black gentleman who was about a generation younger, of course, President Barack Obama, and that obviously shows that Biden does not judge people by their race or even by their age, that he gets along with everybody, doesn't mind having a younger minority as his boss. I mean, I think all the Democratic, well, I don't think Sanders because he's a whack job, but Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren, and I would say Tom Steyer also, as well as, of course, Joe Biden. I feel they all have that same philosophy, but they haven't proven it for 8 years in the public spotlight like Joe Biden has. But obviously, Ron, no secret that most black people are Democrats. And if you want to be a Democratic president, it would be in your best interest to have black people vote for you. So If you were Pete Buttigieg or Elizabeth Warren, or God forbid Bernie Sanders, what would you do to make sure that people who are not white understand that you will work for them and be their president? What advice would you have for those three to try to get some of the minority vote, especially the black vote?
Well, I tell you, particularly in the case of Amy, there's been some issues about her race background and what she's done when she was a prosecutor, and also Pete with South Bend. I don't know. I think that at this point, I think still a very good bet that Joe will win the black vote in South Carolina. But now some people think Bloomberg might, but Bloomberg's got to also deal with the stop and frisk. So I actually think if I was black, I'd say, really, there aren't too many choices except do you want Trump or do you want to have a Democrat and just sort of forgive and forget, and not forget maybe, but forgive, because there's no ideal candidate that looks ideal on the subject of civil rights. Even Joe, back in the past, was pretty harsh on crime, which I'm not saying was wrong, but from the viewpoint of many people who went to prison or their families, they could say Joe was too tough on crime, just like Hillary was in the 90s when her husband was president. So it's hard to be black today and to really find an ideal candidate in the Democratic Party, I guess.
How do we convince people that the president will be tough on crime but will be fair when it comes to race, that will not discriminate? That's almost impossible to do.
Hey, I don't know what the answers are. I really don't. You know, it's a tough issue. I just think any of them would be better. Forget what they did in the past. They'd all be better than Trump on that issue. I think it's the only way to look at it, that it's, you know, that you can't look for perfection. You're looking for someone who's better than Donald Trump. But Donald Trump calling Bloomberg a racist, I think, is hilarious when he himself backed the stop and frisk that Bloomberg and Giuliani did. That's what's so funny. But he's projecting himself all the time. He says, you're a racist. Look in the mirror, Donald.
Yeah, well, the pot calling the kettle black. But that's a lot of what you see in politics, hypocrisy. And, you know, Donald Trump, he's something else. And, you know, that's kind of part of his appeal. I've decided, Ron, that Donald Trump is someone that you hate to love and that you love to hate. And that's just kind of how he is, you know.
She put that on Facebook. That's a funny line.
Yeah, well, me and Joshua F. were talking about that and, you know, mutual Facebook friend of ours. And
yes,
that's how Donald is. I mean, he's just something else. We will never have another president like Donald.
The closest to him, as I point out in my class, as far as his public rhetoric, was Andrew Johnson, you know, who was very loud-mouthed and foul-mouthed also back in 1865 to 1869. But really, nobody else comes close, no.
We're speaking with Dr. Ron Feinman on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor on the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. My name is Adam Lepp. If you didn't already know that, we invite you to email me. I love to hear what you have to say. Comments, questions, complaints, suggestions, or just email me. How you doing today? Don't mind that. Adam at WWGH1071.com. Look up theprogressiveprofessor.com and also become a fan and follower and commenter on The Progressive Professor on Facebook, where Ron posts interesting anecdotes, stories, opinions, and always a surprise or two. Now,
and
listeners,
I'm also on History News Network under my blog name, Ronald L. Feinman, and I just published a new article about the economy in the last 50 years this week.
If it seems like Joe Biden has been running for president ever since Abraham Lincoln was president, well, you wouldn't be mistaken. Ron writes in his blog from last Thursday, Biden has been trying to be president for a third of a century, longer than any presidential contender in American history, having first tried in 1988, 32 years ago, you're not kidding, a third of a century, then 2008, and then now. He has never come near being a serious potential candidate, and his age is a detriment, plus his seemingly declining public performance. Now, we like Joe. He's honest, you know, he's a nice guy, a bit like Jimmy Carter was, and that was kind of a problem with Carter. He's total antithesis of Donald Trump. He was too nice.
Oh, my God, is he?
And, you know, the fact that Donald Trump comes across as this abrasive character, well, that can be an appealing quality because we tried having a nice guy as president, and look what happened. I mean, Jimmy Carter, although it wasn't all of his fault, he had a very rough presidency. The economy stunk, and, you know, interestingly, ironically, the economy is very good right now. The stock market's going nuts. We've been in the bull market for a while. Now, Ron thinks the bubble's going to burst. I don't think so, but we'll find out.
Someday it will. It can't go on forever. It's a question of when.
I mean, Jeff Bezos has gained more zillions of dollars with the Amazon stock continuing to go up. He owns 12% of Amazon, and Amazon is now trading at over $2,000 a share. So he, along with other shareholders, are currently at the Rolls-Royce dealership buying another vehicle because they become multi-zillionaires. And granted, Donald Trump does seem to spend a lot of taxpayers' money on golfing. Doesn't really seem to do much other than tweet at 3 o'clock in the morning. But maybe that's what you need to do to be successful, because Donald Trump is a bit of a phenomenon. And personally, I think, Ron, with all the disagreement in the Democratic Party, that the election is all but over. The good economy, Donald's unusual but successful foreign policy decisions, even independents like myself are kind of wondering, whom are you going to vote for? Now, I would like to see Amy as the Democratic contender. Hopefully I'll be wrong. Hopefully she'll win. And I would vote for her, pending she doesn't make a stupid vice presidential choice. But if the nominee is anybody else, other than possibly Buttigieg or possibly Biden or a long shot Steyer, I can make no promises about whom I will vote for. To take a look at the state of the United States under the Trump administration, I understand he's an objectionable person. I understand he had his wife give a medal to a very objectionable person, Mr. Rush Limbaugh. But you have to kind of take it in stride. You pick the person whom you think the United States will enjoy the most success under. The bottom line is I am prone to change my mind, have a right to change my mind, and very well will probably do that between now and when I go to the polls in early November. But like a lot of people,
I wanted to mention a fly in the ointment could be Tulsi Gabbard, who's still in the race. She's not going to be the nominee, but Hillary Clinton's condemned her. Others have condemned her for being friendly with Assad of Syria. And some people think she's a Trump supporter in a way, in a background Russian connection. And they worry she could possibly run as an independent candidate with 2-3% of the vote. And look, 5% of the people voted for the voted for the independent candidates in 2016. So she could actually mess up the Democrats if she did run as a third party or independent candidate.
It also happened with, of course, John Anderson, a very liberal Republican, certainly not like a Mike Pence type of Republican, but a very left-wing one.
I like John Anderson a lot in 1980.
Yes. Yeah, and he had a major effect on that hotly contested election. And sometimes these third parties, Jill Stein from the last election, they can definitely...
And Gary Johnson, together they won 5.6% of the vote. That's a lot.
Yeah, they can definitely have an effect. The bottom line is, folks, go to the polls and make a decision. And if you have to hold your nose to vote for the lesser of evils, well, you're probably like most Americans. But, Ron, you are a...
John Anderson, 95. You imagine? He died at age 95. John Anderson's amazing life,
And, of course, Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, interviewed John Anderson. But, of course, last week he spoke with Sam Donaldson one day, and the next day he spoke with Phil Donahue. I mean,
fantastic.
It's amazing the kind of things that we do here at this radio station. And then when Scott was speaking with Phil Donahue, as I told you, Ron, Sam Donaldson was listening online. And
I was
very impressed
with
the interview, and sent Scott an email congratulatory message. How about that? A congratulatory message from one of the legendary anchormen and news people, Sam Donaldson. If that is not the ultimate in compliments, I do not know what is. Pretty cool stuff.
I'm sure Scott Spears is flying high right now, right?
I would say he is a happy gentleman at this time. Now, Ron, you are one of those vote blue no matter who people. Actually, it's no matter whom, but that sounds kind of dumb. So we'll just make a slight grammatical guffaw. Vote blue no matter who. And that doesn't matter if it's someone who's really objectionable, Sanders or Bloomberg, for example. You feel that Bozo the Clown would be a better choice than Donald Trump.
Bozo the Clown. I've had most trouble voting for Sanders, but I would not vote for Trump. And I wouldn't stay home. And Bloomberg is not as objectionable because he has a pretty good record as mayor. There are things I don't like about him, and I don't like his being so wealthy, but I still think he's probably more electable than many of the Democrats, actually.
You write about Michael Bloomberg on Tuesday, February 11th. He's worth $55 to $60 billion. Now, not quite as much as Jeff Bezos, but certainly enough to pay the rent. Or maybe just buy a whole city block.
Somebody in my class told me he's worth $69 billion now, maybe because of the stock market. I thought it was 55 to 60. Maybe he's closer to $70 billion. Can you believe this?
Well, bottom line is he is a very rich gentleman. Now, there are folks who believe, and I would probably agree at least partially with this, that Michael Bloomberg is trying to buy a victory in the election. Do you agree with that? Is he just trying to buy his way in? He's using his own money to fund ads and fund this campaign. Is that the way that you get to be president? Can that be done?
I don't like that trend. But again, I think a lot of people they will probably have to hold their nose and close their eyes and vote if he's the nominee because they don't want Trump. And because he does have a record as mayor, not forgetting the stop and frisk, but he actually did a lot of good things, and he has good stands on gun issues and on the environment and health care. So those are important issues. So I wouldn't be happy with him, but I also think that, you know, as long as he has a good running mate, that would be most important, because he's already 78 now. He will be 79, one month short of 79 when he takes the oath, if he does. I think his birthday was on Valentine's Day. So I do think we need a good running mate with any of the older people, particularly in case because of the age and health issue. But I just think his record on many issues is certainly far better than Trump.
Does Mike Bloomberg have a chance? He seems to be increasing his popularity. More people know about the guy.
Yes.
Is he really a possibility, or maybe could he be vice president?
Don't think he would accept being vice president. He's also old to be. He shouldn't have a vice president that's almost 80. I mean, as a backup to a younger person, that's not, I think, too smart. But I want to point out, we've had people like Eisenhower and Nixon were about 20 years apart, with Eisenhower the older one, and then we had Obama and Biden about 20 years apart, but the vice president was the older one. So you can have someone like Amy work with Pete. Either way, Pete and Amy, or Amy and Pete, one is older, one is younger, it doesn't matter. But you don't want to have, I don't think you want the vice president to be 80 years old almost. So I don't think Biden or Bloomberg or even Bernie in theory would take it, or that it would be a wise idea to be vice president. No.
We've talked about Donald Trump being that CEO kind of president, and maybe that's working. Again, the economy is very good right now, and I give more and more credit to Donald Trump for that. And I don't agree with you, Ron, that it's hanging on the coattails of the Obama administration. I believe Obama destroyed the health insurance system that we have. Obamacare, although well-meaning, has caused premiums to go crazy.
20 million people, whatever they had to pay, have health insurance. The Republicans would give them nothing. So even if it's costly, it's better for those 20 million people to have health insurance than have none.
It's nice that pre-existing conditions are covered, but if you can't afford the premium, what's the use? Meanwhile,
20 million people did somehow.
Yeah, well,
I don't know what their circumstances were, but
I'm seeing my premium go through the roof, and I just don't think it's fair.
Obamacare was the Republican plan of Gingrich and Doe in 1993-94. It was the most that could be gained because of the Republican opposition. It could not get even a public option because at that time Republicans wouldn't allow it in 2009-2010.
It would be nice, Ron, we can certainly agree on that, if things were like they used to be, Republicans and Democrats can work together and make Obamacare better. Or replace it with something that
the entire House, the 250 bills are not going to be considered, so nothing's going to happen because of the Republican Senate.
Or replace it with something that actually is effective, but right now that doesn't seem to be logical. Now we have Bernie Sanders.
You know, I heard there was a poll that said that Obamacare is 10% more popular than is Trump. Trump's in the low 40s. Obamacare has a majority behind it now. Isn't that interesting?
Depends how you look at it. Just like the unemployment saying it's the lowest in 50 years, especially among minorities, and people are twisting that. Well, I see unemployment as being very low. I see the economy is very, very good. I see companies growing. Of course, that kind of gets into trickle down. But, you know, Ron, you'd agree trickle down is part of the capitalist system that we have.
Yeah.
And we have people like AOC saying they don't want Amazon in their neighborhood because they've just got so much money, they don't pay taxes. Well, that is true, but they also bring jobs. And again, that's what trickle down is.
Yeah, it's one of those double-edged swords.
It's not a
Jeff Bezos fan, but he also runs the Washington Post. And I think the Washington Post is a very important newspaper and has done a great job.
It's a tricky situation, but bottom line is, again, trickle down is part of the capitalist system. And that's why a socialist, and I believe he's a little close to a communist, and many people do, but there are increasing number of people who would also agree with me. We even put him further to the left than I do. That his system, what he proposes, just wouldn't work. That a Medicare for all is not what we need.
I agree. I want to mention, though, there's some columnists who say he's not a socialist, he's a social democrat, like in Sweden, that it's a difference, that it's not really the same, it's not as dangerous as it sounds. I don't know.
It depends how you look at it. You know, Ron, that in the past he supported these socialist worker parties. I don't care if he took his honeymoon in Russia. I don't see that as even being relevant. That to me is unfair. But, you know, supporting these worker parties, we all know what that means. Those are communist or communist-leaning or communist-sympathizing bodies of thought. And you take a look at that also back in the 70s where he wanted government control of business. That sounds like communism to me. And I've mentioned socialism in many cases just a gateway drug, so to speak, into communism. And it's not an established system in this country. And we talk about FDR. Was he a democratic socialist? I think things were different. Plus, we had a different...
He wasn't a socialist, though. Socialist Party of Norman Thomas was critical of him for not doing enough.
So
he really was not a socialist. But, of course, the right wing said he was.
FDR. The world was different when FDR became president and during his presidency. So you're not really comparing apples to apples. That Sanders really is something entirely different. And nothing he would want to get accomplished would ever get accomplished, even by other Democrats.
Yeah, what's interesting is young people support him mostly. Well, older people like Pete. There's people I lectured to, mostly Jewish, they love Pete. It's really funny.
A lot of young people think they're entitled, like, free stuff. Yeah, free college, free health care. Everything is free. Well, it doesn't really work that way. They need to understand something called the real world, something called adulting. And that's not compatible with the adulting that people like Ron and myself are familiar with. Now, we have Pete saying Medicare if you want it, or a Medicare-type policy. But if you want to keep your current insurance, you can go ahead and do that. Oh, a bit of a compromise. And that's, again, as you said, become pretty popular. And we'll see what happens as the election gets closer. And if one of the Democrats wins and wants to have that Medicare, if you desire it, or get private insurance if you desire it, if the person wants that to occur, we'll see if that's what actually happens. It'll certainly be different from the system that we have right now. You write last week, Ron, the ugly specter of anti-Semitism, anti-socialism, homophobia, and misogyny, always like that word, alive in 2020 presidential campaign. I don't like the word because it's a good thing. It's a very bad thing. It means not liking females. I just like the way the word is spelled and the uniqueness of the word. But what it means is something very bad. And again, I'm be the first person in line to say it's time to have a female president or vice president. And certainly Amy, a possible holder of that title, first female president, is one thing that's attractive about her, but I kind of like her policies in general. She is an economic middle of the road, if not somewhat conservative, which is certainly my cup of tea. And again, good age. She's 60.
I think it's going to be a dirty race, a dirty campaign. I compare it to 1828, 1860, 1896, 1912, 28, 48, 68, and 2016. I think it's guaranteed because if it's Pete, it's going to be anti-gay people coming out. And if it's Bloomberg or Sanders, they're going to be, because they're Jewish, and in the case of Sanders, because he's a so-called socialist. And, of course, of a woman, Warren or Klobuchar, it'll be that. So I think it's going to be ugly, and I don't think Trump's going to even think about anything other than doing whatever he has to do to attack the opposition and use whatever slime he can.
Well, Ron, it's been ugly since Donald Trump took office, since people were considering becoming the next president, and it's only going to get crazier. We talked about the recipient of the Presidential Medal given by the lovely Melania Trump, and that was Mr. Rush Limbaugh. Since then, Ron, a lot of...
lovely. I don't.
Well, I don't agree with that. I'm just mentioning that he got the award. He deserves it about as much as...
being lovely.
He deserves it about as much as I deserve to be the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals. Well, I agree. Melania is lovely, but my opinion of her as a person certainly has dropped substantially since that incident. Been a lot going around on social media about the derogatory comments Rush Limbaugh has made regarding Pete Buttigieg kissing his husband, Justin Buttigieg, and how can that be explained? What do you have to say about that, Ron?
Well, I think it's disgraceful, and I think it's promoting homophobia, and I don't think it's acceptable. One thing I got to say, though, is that Trump was asked about that, and he said, you know, obviously he doesn't support Pete, but he said he doesn't really have a problem with the concept of a gay president. I'm surprised he said that. I hope that Pete's the candidate, therefore there is no homophobia coming from the Trump campaign. There may be from other right-wing sources, but hopefully and religious sources. But I would think a lot of these evangelicals would be very upset that he would say he would have no issue, in theory, with a gay president.
I was
shocked he said that.
Yeah, think about Donald Trump, and you know, I almost the same thing about Nixon and a lot of politicians. It's not Donald Trump who is the prejudiced one; it's the people that he associates with. But they all count, just like with Richard Nixon. He associated with the people behind Watergate. He condoned it. He knew about it. So he's guilty. He's guilty by association, and kind of the same thing with Donald Trump. And is it good or bad? Well, it's part of being president. And he appoints these people. He hangs out with these people. And so he's one of them, even though deep down he may not think the same way. After all, he was a Democrat a while back, or an independent.
Yes, he was.
And we take a look at his history. And what does...
support financially Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi and other people. It's hilarious when you think of how it's changed.
What does Donald Trump the man think? How does that differ from Donald Trump the politician? Quite a bit. And that's all part of the mystique of Donald Trump. He is something else, and you know, good or bad, that's part of how he is. Now, you're right that the fact that Michael Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders are Jewish and that Sanders is a self-professed socialist, which is not communism in any sense, and we've talked about I don't agree with that. I agree partially, but I do feel that Sanders is a communist sympathizer and a borderline communist, and his history, again, supporting these worker parties, which are communist, and that's what they are, and his desire to have big business controlled by government back in the 70s, which is well in my lifetime, I take issue with that. Anyway, those things are part of the upcoming political debate, and we talked about Pete Buttigieg is gay and as a husband is certainly to be part of the political debate, with hatred and prejudice existing among right-wing and evangelical Christians, conservative Catholics, and Orthodox Jews. Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar are serious presidential contenders who will stir the misogynists who think women should only be in the kitchen and the bedroom and not running for president or vice president, that also known as being barefoot and pregnant.
Yes. It's all about that. There was this, I don't know, bishop of some kind who was saying that if a woman allows her husband, to do anal sex on her, it'll make the kid gay. I could not believe that.
Yeah,
that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. So I just said, this guy needs to be defrocked, and he needs to have his brain matter removed.
To which I said, what brain? I don't think he has one.
I don't believe, what kind of a crazy comment is that?
Now, one thing about the presidents not being white men. We broke the ice with Barack Obama. Do we need to further break the ice before we can realistically believe, as Americans, that the president does not have to be a man? That if you're female, if you're gay, if in case of Pete, even under 40 years old, barely old enough, barely above the 35-year age restriction, that those kind of people can be president. You don't have to be an old white guy or, in the case of Obama, an old guy or be heterosexual. That the presidency is open to anyone, and demographic just isn't really important anymore. Or even, you know, 50 years from now when we probably will have had maybe another black president, maybe a female president, maybe one or two gay presidents. Will we still be leery about considering the serious candidacy of someone who's not a heterosexual male to be president? I mean, does the ice need to be broken further after having Obama for 8 years?
Well, I'd say just like the first Catholic, meaning non-Protestant with Kennedy, and the first person who's not white, Obama, I think we need to break the ice. And I think Pete and Amy, or Amy and Pete, even if one of them is vice president, would be breaking two barriers if they actually won. We'd have a woman and we'd have a gay man, no matter which end of the team it would be. And then in theory, whoever is vice president might succeed to the presidency, either directly by election or who knows. So I think it'd be wonderful. Of us, and I want to still repeat what I keep on saying, the Midwest, that's the area Hillary lost. These people are both from the Midwest. So any combination of the two of them, whether Pete's the president or Amy, the other the vice president, really makes sense.
So we need to further break the ice. And
I think we have to get away from coastline candidates all the time. The country is not just the coastlines. And I think the flyover country, as they call it, resents that. And they have a candidate who's from the Midwest. People in the Midwest and parts of the South will actually consider voting for someone who is a Democrat, I think.
And ironically, Ohio, right here in the Midwest, is not as large as Texas or California, but is so important in determining who will become president. Here we are right in the Midwest. And we have Amy Klobuchar, yes, from Minnesota, and Pete Buttigieg from nearby Indiana. But
yes,
not to mention Texas and other states that are in the middle of the country. So yeah, the United States, as we talked about earlier, 50 states plus Puerto Rico plus Washington, D.C. Let's see a better representation of our populace be among the candidates that voters like us can choose when we go to the polls. Well, we have lots more interesting events coming up between now, Ron, and the next time that we talk, like always
well,
seems to happen.
We have a Nevada debate this week where Bloomberg's going to be involved in it during this week, so that's good. And we'll get to see him as a debater for the first time.
Like always seems to happen, our time flies, but flies,
yes,
when you're having
fun. Have fun, though.
And talking presidentology and politics, the fun never ends, and with the primary season now getting ready to go into full gear, it's only going to get funner, if that's a word. Not to mention, baseball season has started, spring training has begun, so many topics to talk about, politics, and whatever else.
Anyway, happy President's Day again.
Happy President's Day, folks. Thank you for listening to The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Thank you again, Ron, for being my brother in broadcasting, partner in crime, and microphone mate. How about that one? Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again soon. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Again, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Adam at WWGH1071.com.